Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, and this week I'm joined by Stephen Robb, our renewables editor and tillage man. We're recording on Thursday the 17th of November in the morning time, just for reference later on when we're talking about grain prices. It's been a wet week and a fairly mixed week overall. I've seen a few drills out, I've seen the sprayers out, so there is a little bit of field work going on, but look, overall it's fairly wet. Stephen, I think you'd agree, like, you know, I was just looking up rainfall figures during the week, and September and October, just looking at Oak Park's figures, the rainfall figures are double normal levels for September and October. A lot of crops with patches, you know, crops didn't come up. They came up and they died away, maybe. It's a tough time on farms.
It really is, and it's unfortunate, Siobhan, considering the year that we've had. The last time I was on the podcast with Andy, we were just discussing the fact that there is patches appearing in a lot of the established crops. And to be honest, Siobhan, from what I see, that's only getting worse. Now, temperatures this week might do something to kind of halt the growth a bit, which I think we all really want at this stage. But I think in some cases anyway, Siobhan, we're going to be looking at resows, or certainly resows on certain parts of the fields next year.
Yeah, look, I think people have given up, you know, on planting, you know, unless you're in an exceptionally lucky area that you do get out. I think people have given up, so maybe there'll be spring barley going into some of those patches as well. It's hard to know. People are getting out spraying. I'm looking at some tracks in fields, Stephen, where people are going out, so it's a fine balance. Like, we all know we want to get the herbicides on early for grass weed control, but people, you know, need to think about their soil and the field for the rest of the year. You know, don't be leaving big tracks in tram lines. If you're leaving a big track in a tram line, you shouldn't be in the field.
I've seen some big tracks and tram lines now. I can assure you that, up in this part of the world over the past couple of weeks. But look, like, there are still, this week I suppose we would have had two somewhat settled days, and there was opportunities for the spud guys, and there's plenty of beet being harvested as well around the country. There is opportunities for work, I suppose, but it's just about picking your time and your fields carefully.
Yeah, a good few going at beet now this week, and talking about going at beet towards the end of the week. So maybe next week we'll have a better idea on yields on beet, because up to now people had only been picking at parts of fields and stuff. Stephen, a good number of spuds up around you. Like, there is still bits of spuds to come out, like, you know, and I know a lot of the spuds have come out, and we had yield results came out there from Chagas. What were, are spud farmers happy?
Yeah, I suppose, look, there's still spuds coming out around the country. I'd say if we're at the halfway mark up here, if even, that's where we'd be at. I think the consensus is that It hasn't been a superb year for Spuds. I think Chagas came out with a figure of, on average, a 15% yield reduction. I am hearing a lot of issues with quality this year. Some issues caused by drought and also kind of difficulties when harvesting. A lot of issues with bruising as well, from what I gather. So, and look, with no Dyquat this year as well, you know, the flail would have had to be used. And this time of year, just flailing just doesn't, it's just not a good mix in kind of wet spud ground. Like, so all that's kind of having an impact. It's not proven to be the best year, from what I gather, in terms of price as well. It's just not where it needs to be at. And of course, Siobhan, can't ignore the energy end of things. Like, I think a lot of spud farmers would be really happy to see the temperatures come back this week, in terms of the cost of running their fridges, because it has been abnormally warm. And while that's good for a lot of households, keeping the heating bill down, it's the opposite for anyone with refrigeration requirements, because you just got to run them that bit harder. A lot of the spud farmers are out of contract as well, or were out of contract this year, from what I gather. So they're straight into you know, extremely high energy prices. So it's all adding up, Siobhan.
Yeah, and they're things that people never think about. You know, people going to buy their spuds in the shop and they don't wonder where they've been for the past year or however long it's been. Like, you know, the potato conference is coming up next week, and I'd say it'll be a very interesting one. You know, it'll be the first one in a good while since before COVID, and it'll be a good one to hear people's views. Chagas, like at the start of November, had said there was 20 to 30% of the crop to be harvested. But as you said, Stephen, like, you know, there's some farmers with a lot to harvest, and then there's others who are finished or who have 4 acres left, or, you know, mixed on in the potatoes. But we definitely need, you know, we need our potato area to stay at those 8,000 hectares or increase. And it's hard to see it increasing at the minute.
It's very, very, very hard to see how it's going to increase, Siobhan. Anyone I've spoken to about potato area next year, everyone's off the consensus that it's going to come back.
Yeah, and that's like, I just wonder, do the government realize that? I mean, we're only 60% self-sufficient in potatoes here in this country, and, you know, we're looking at those high energy prices. It's the same as the vegetable farmers. Like, what are government going to do to stop that decrease coming? You know, and hopefully some of those politicians are going to go to the potato conference next week and actually hear people's voices, or at least read what comes out of it, because we're probably facing into a dodgy time in the potato industry.
Certainly.
Yeah. Anyway, Stephen, we'll move on. We're still going to these CAP meetings. So we were in Cavan this week, and the last one will be in Kerry next week. It's on Wednesday, the 23rd, in the Rose Hotel in Tralee. There was a few tillage farmers in Cavan, a few from Loudonmead, and asking good questions and calling for potatoes to be added into the to the rotation on the eco schemes, and rightly calling for it. The department said they've heard that request and they'll think about it now, but we had put in that request a lot of times before on this podcast. But anyway, hopefully they heard it this time. Stephen, I was amazed. There was a lot of renewables chat in Cavan. Plenty of farmers interested in solar and microgeneration.
Yeah, look, there was a lot of questions on renewables, but just before I get into that, I would just say that, like, that was my first time going to one of the CAP meetings. Siobhan, I know you've been at a few of them, and it was a full house. There's well over 200 people there, 200 farmers there. And it just goes to show you that there is a real need for knowledge out there as to the changes that are coming in CAP, because let's call a spade, it's bloody complicated. It is a complicated CAP scheme that we're facing into, and it's not really a good one either. So there wasn't much good news. There wasn't from what I got, especially from the tillage perspective. But to come back to renewables, Siobhan, look, there are some real good questions towards the end around renewables options and how it interacts with the CAP. And look, the answer is it doesn't really interact with the CAP. It's the only renewables element to do with CAP is TAM, so it is. And look, I think TAMS, for all its faults with renewables, and I'm really chatting about solar panels here, it's still a bloody good scheme. It's a really good scheme. And next year we're going to be facing into a separate ceiling altogether, so an entirely separate budget almost for solar panels. Yeah, up to 90,000. Also increasing the size of the panels, which you can install on your farm. If you're a, you know, dairy tillage, dry stock, beef farm, or whatever, poultry and pigs are separate. They would be able to install much larger systems anyway. But traditionally, we would have been limited to 11 kilowatt. I think that's going up to about 30 kilowatt. So it really is a good scheme. Obviously, the issue, Siobhan, is that with TAMS is that you're not supposed to be able to export excess electricity to the grid. So in other words, you have to size your solar PV system to the energy requirements of your farm. And now your house can be included in that as well, that's on the farm. So, yeah. You know, there was always a lot of kind of confusion around that as to why they just won't let us export it. But when you get into the details of it, Siobhan, they can't actually stop you from exporting it just due to the type of grid connection that you have. It's called NC6 or NC7. Good. So in other words, all that they can do really is stop you from installing a larger system than what you need and getting TAMS funding for it. So yeah, look, you'll have to fill out a solar survey to kind of prove that the system that you want to install and get TAMS funding on is the appropriate size for your farm, pretty much, and that you won't be exporting much to the grid. But still, yeah. Look, I've been chatting to farmers a lot over the past few months about this, and I've seen payback periods on paper anyway of 2.5 years. Siobhan, that's phenomenal. There's never been a better time for considering solar, no matter what size of an enterprise you have, than now.
Yeah. I mean, grain farmers should be doing this, Stephen, shouldn't they? I mean, you know, for whether it's blowing air on their grain or whatever it may be, they have the sheds there. Should they be investing in this?
Everyone should be investing in this, realistically. Like, yeah, look, I get it. It's you know, an upfront cost, no matter really what size of a system you have, it's still large. It's, you know, could be in excess of 10 grand or so, like for a smaller system, for a 5-6 kilowatt system. And that is small, but if you're getting 60% TAMS grant on that, and you're displacing electricity, which you're buying for 35 cent a kilowatt hour, it just makes sense. So it does. There are finance options, low cost finance options out there, you know, if you need to finance it, like, and I'd strongly consider it. But obviously, just the issue with tillage farms is that we do have a relatively low energy load, and it's relatively inconsistent as well if you're using, you know, fans to blow air or whatever, like, but still, it shouldn't stop you from investing in solar. So you shouldn't know it. Even if you displace, you know, 70% of your farm's electricity requirement on average over the year, and it's still going to be a massive saving after that solar system's paid off in 2.5-3 years time.
Yeah, and hopefully it gets a bit more straightforward to give back to the grid. And look, you can put your house on it as well. Stephen, I'm going to backtrack in a minute here, because we were talking about the CAP meetings, and something I saw that's clear at the CAP meetings is there's a lack of understanding on the difference between the eco schemes and the acres and how you qualify for your eco schemes. So Andy has done that on the tillage pages this week. He's explained the eco schemes very well, and he has details of the different eco schemes available there for tillage farmers. So that's definitely well worth a read, a must read for tillage farmers this week, because tillage farmers mightn't qualify on that space for nature. And look, if you read the pages, you'll see that. There's a good bit of tillage news in the paper this week. There's a new app there to geotag your photos, which is really interesting. It'll come in handy for the straw incorporation scheme and the protein aid scheme. And then there's other bits of news. Look, if you have green waste or bushes on your farm, they need to be burnt by the end of the year, or else you won't be able to burn them. And there's updates there on progress in the fields and stuff as well. Stephen, you're talking about Tierlawn, and they're building an AD plant in Ballyragget, are they?
Yeah, Siobhan, they are, or they want to, and they submitted planning permission for an AD plant on their site, just across the road from their site in Ballyragget. Look, really, Siobhan, it's replacing old wastewater treatment facilities. So this modern AD plant's going to be used as a wastewater treatment plant. But also I think they're going to use sludges and whatnot which come out of the Ballyragget plant in the entire system. So they'll be producing about Oh, about 20 gigawatt hours worth of biogas is what we've been told. So that is just a little bit under the typical output of what's going to be a modern farm scale AD plant in Ireland. But look, I think that it makes sense for them. They're going to be using the gas in their existing boilers. You know, they're using natural gas as is, so they're going to be replacing it with biomethane, which makes sense. They're going to be using their waste product, won't be importing anything else, and are just upgrading the efficiency of the entire system. So I think it's an interesting indication as to where some of these processors are going to go. You know, I know for a fact that Coca-Cola, for example, up in Mayo, had been looking into their own AD plant for a long time to use their byproducts to produce gas. We have Lakelands. I think they inherited a smaller scale AD plant. We have one of the meat processors. I think it could it be Foyle? They have an AD plant.
Yeah,
so. Carberry. I think Carberry have an AD plant as well. So, look, I think that's what's happening, and that's where it's going. I think we're going to see more at this industrial level. But also, Siobhan, I think it's an important kind of lesson or something to be aware of for anyone considering developing an AD plant off their own. In other words, they shouldn't be relying, and they shouldn't build the business case on securing, you know, food waste and whey from the likes of these processors, because, you know, in a few years' time, it mightn't be there.
Yeah, they'll be building their own. Yeah, really good point to make. And Stephen, like, just so that AD plant in Ballaragget, like, they'll take waste from the plant. What else will go into that digester? Will they need, you know, will they need a stock? Will they need maize silage or rye, or, you know, will they need grass to go into it, or how does it work?
I don't think so, Siobhan. I was looking at the EIR documents on the planning application, and I think they explicitly state that they're not going to be importing anything else into the AD plant, and that's why, you know, that's why it's the size that it is. Like, it's, you know, it's not an overly large AD plant, so it's not. Okay. And in terms of their gas output, it's not going to be enough to fully satisfy the plant. So, look, I think the way that these processors are going to go, and I would imagine that Tirlan are the same. They're going to be using that. The gas from their own AD plant to satisfy an amount of their gas requirements, and then eventually they're going to be buying green gas to displace the rest of their natural gas use.
Okay, yeah. Look, we'll stick with renewables and methane. I think it's important. There's a lot of farmers interested in this at the minute, so we'll stick with it, Stephen. You were at the RGFI biomethane conference last week, and I see it's wrote about in the paper quite a bit between yourself and Matt Dempsey, and, you know, there is great interest in this at the minute, and, you know, this is, but it's AD's time, if you like, and solar's time. So, like, I presume, first of all, it was an exciting conference to go to.
Yeah, Siobhan, it was. In fairness, it was a really good conference, I have to say. I think where what the best way to describe it is that the AD industry is where the solar industry was at, you know, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe, you know, and now you have well over 150 solar farms, either through planning or in planning. So then the feeling is that the AD industry is just at that point now. So it is whereby we're going to see supports coming through to make these facilities work. And we're seeing the first of the modern AD plants working our way through the planning application system, and indeed securing planning. And as we heard from the conference, Siobhan, there's going to be a lot of opportunities off the back of this. And it's going to be farmer centric, because the industry simply won't work or won't develop if it's not farmer centric. And yeah, look, it's going to have a role to play in decarbonizing agriculture and energy.
Okay, good. Yeah. So like, do you see farmers growing crops for some of these plants? What are the opportunities for the listeners to this podcast?
So look, I think there's a number of different kind of levels of opportunity, if you want to call it that. The first one is AD plant development. I know tillage farmers who are either working on planning applications for modern AD plant, or have a planning application through at this stage or are considering submitting a planning application. So they very much see themselves as the developers. So that is possible, that is happening, and it is going to be kind of one level of involvement with the industry. The next one is, look, we've heard an awful lot about cooperative models. The cooperative model for an ADE plant, it needs an awful lot of work, Siobhan. It is nowhere near as simple or straightforward or as idealistic as it's being made out to be. ADE plants are complicated animals, and it takes an awful lot of work to get a project from the ground through planning, through construction and into commissioning. And for a group of farmers to come together and do that, look, it is possible, it's being done around the country, but I just don't think it's going to be overly widespread to begin with. But I do think that farmers are going to have the opportunity to either invest in AD plants or, you know, to take an equity stake in an AD plant, either with a private developer or through some kind of a system like that. So I think you're going to see situations whereby farmers will be able to take a share out in an AD plant. And then, of course, from the feedstock supply point of view, as I said, Siobhan, the AD industry, there's going to be over 200 plants needed by 2030 in order to meet the government's targets. There's just not going to be enough waste to in the country to feed all of those plants. So that's why farmers are going to have a massive role in supplying them. So for the listeners of the Tillage podcast, how that's going to look is, I think hybrid rye has got a big role to play in AD plants going forward. It's already a growing crop in the north for AD plants, and it's already big in England. And I think we're going to see the same here, and it fits in really, really well in the tillage and tillage rotations. It's to say that other crops such as beet and maize and whatnot aren't going to play a role in AD, which some are saying. That's not true. They are. It's just not going to be, there's not going to be massive volumes of the crops put into the feedstock mix. And that's because beet and maize, and even, you know, whole crop wheat or whatever, it takes a lot of chemical nitrogen to grow it. So it does. Or sorry, it takes a lot of chemical fertilizer to grow them. And all of that has a greenhouse gas emissions rating, which is taken into consideration when you consider the overall carbon intensity of the gas that you're producing. So it's got to be below. Green gas has to reduce emissions by 70% compared to natural gas. And all of the processes which are involved in producing that green gas, that biomethane, are taken into consideration, including the chemicals and the chemical fertilizer that's used to grow the crops, which goes into the AD plant. So for that reason, Siobhan, and kind of dragging it out a bit there, but that's why the amount of beet and maize that's put into AD plants is going to be limited, but there is going to be a role for it. Grass seems to be the big one as well. We all know that we're good at growing grass. That's not new, and we can grow grass on pretty much anywhere as well. So that's the way they're kind of phrasing it. There's going to be a combination of grass and slurry. We need slurry. We need a lot of slurry to mix in with the feedstock for these AD plants. From a mechanical point of view, to physically move and mix the stuff in the plant, but also from a sustainability point of view. So when I said that, you know, the likes of beet and maize would have a relatively high GHG rating, well, slurry has virtually none, you know, other than the emissions from transporting it to the farm, to the plant. So that's why you've got to mix the two in order to hit that 70% reduction. But of course, the challenge of slurry is that, you know, the gas yields are really poor compared to maize or beet. So that's why you have to find a balance to make it all add up from a sustainability point of view, and to make it economical as well.
That's really interesting, because we always have the, you know, we've the food and feed and versus fuel debate. And, you know, you hear about, you know, ethanol in the United States and the corn that's used to grow it. And so that's the good thing that's taken into account in the AD. And like when you say slurry is going in, look, there's going to be digestate coming back out of these plants as well.
Yeah, 100%. And that's, you're bang on. Like there's, you know, ballpark 97% of what you put in, that's come out again in the form of digestate. you know, and that's got to be used. I think we're with modern AD plants, we're going to see nutrient recovery systems in place whereby maybe some of the water is taken out of off the digestate, so you concentrate it, or maybe it's dried down and pelletized. You're seeing those systems working their way through and planting as we speak. So I look, there's going to be a lot of access to digestate, whether it's raw digestate or whether it's upgraded digestate. It just depends on the plant, but just on the food versus fuel as well, Siobhan, like we had a representative from the European Commission who was on the panel that I was chairing, George Pinto Antunes, and he made it very clear that from the European Commission's point of view, you know, they have a massive target of 300 terawatt hours of a biomethane, new build biomethane by 2030. That would be about 20,000 AD plants if they were the same scale as Turland's one, to put it in context. But they explicitly said that they don't see food crops being used in this in modern AD plants. That is going to be, you know, waste, it's going to be slurry, it's going to be sequential crops, which, you know, I have a major problem with. So they're essentially cover crops and residues and all that crack, like, you know. But, you know, I don't think anybody really bought it in the room, like, because our AD industry, it's literally going to be modeled off grass and off slurry. Okay. So, and grass is a primary crop, like, so. Yeah. And there's nothing, as it stands, Siobhan, there's nothing to say that you can't use grass or beet or maize in an AD plant, so long as you meet the sustainability criteria. Unless something changes, that's just the way that it is. So we kind of took what he said with a pinch of salt.
Fair enough. And Stephen, like you're saying, there's a lot of these in planning or have been accepted for planning. How are these farmers funding the projects or developers, whatever it is?
That's the problem, Siobhan, isn't it? Like, because there was a real good section at the conference on finance, and Russell Smith, if anybody knows him, of KPMG Sustainable Futures, really, really good guy. I think he's personally funded about a third of the AD plants which are on this island. So he's really experienced, like the majority of them in the north, mind you, but they're really experienced. And he was saying, look, the investability of AD in Ireland, it really depends on whether or not the farmer or developer or whatever can get a long-term contract for their gas. You know, a long-term 10 to 15 year offtake agreement, so that you have certainty that you're going to be able to sell the gas at a certain price. More or less, like, investors won't sign up unless you have that as an absolute minimum. But he has said that over the past 6 months, he's seen there's been a step change in terms of investors who are interested in AD and want to get involved in AD. He says that, look, there's capital funding, it's not going to be the issue once we are able to develop a project which is investable. He says there's just that much money out there that there's not going to be a problem getting it, but you just have to have a project which is capable of getting it, if you get me. So look, that really, the ball's kind of thrown back into the government's court there now, like, because what you see in other countries is that you have some kind of a state-backed support scheme whereby it gives the farmers and the developers that kind of 10 to 15 year certainty of price, and then they're able to go off and get the finance from these investors to build their plants. Because, you know, that a modern AD plant, farm scale AD plants, it's going to cost you 10 million, Siobhan. There's no two ways about it. Like, that's just what you're talking about now. So the money's out there, Siobhan, but we don't have the right environment for investment yet, is the best way to put it. And we really need the government to step up and help create that environment.
No, look, Stephen, that was really good. Thanks a mil for that. And it sounds like that conference was like Christmas week for you, I think.
Yeah. It's bread and butter stuff now, Siobhan. So it is.
Speaking of conferences, I might just tell listeners about some of the conferences that are coming up. So the Padeisio conference, that's run by the IFA, Chagas and Bord Bia, that's on next Tuesday, so the 22nd of November, in City North Hotel in County Meath. And the I don't have the lineup of speakers for that yet, but it kicks off at registration from 9 o'clock, and then it's the theme of the conference is protecting your business for the future. So very appropriate given what we were talking about earlier on. The following week then, Thursday the 1st of December, the Irish Tillage and Land Use Society will host its conference. That's going to be in the Clonard Court Hotel in the Tay County Kildare. It's been there for as long as I've been in Itlis. First part of the morning will focus on efficient nitrogen use and the use of liquid nitrogen and urea. They'll have Garrett Culligan, a farmer from County Louth, speaking, and Andrew O'Regan, he's from the Southeast Technological University, or WIT. Then Rory Deverill is going to come on. He's from Stone X. And Rory's going to talk about risk management on your farm and options for forward selling and things like that. And then in the afternoon, Bill Callanan from the Department of Agriculture is going to speak. And Kieran Hickey is going to speak in that session as well. And they're going to discuss the future policy, the direction of future policy for tillage farmers. And then that's going to conclude then with a panel discussion. So that looks like it'll be really interesting and probably a good time of the year as well to have it. And then the big one is back then, not till January, but the National Tillage Conference will be held on Wednesday, the 25th of January in Kilkenny in the Lyrath Hotel. And look, focus on cereal disease management, barley yellow dwarf virus. I think the barley yellow dwarf virus bit of this conference is going to be really good this year. I think people are really going to be looking forward to it. They'll be talking about integrated weed management. They'll give an overview of some of the research that's going on and then look at some of the value added opportunities in the plant protein space. Some of the tillage conference is online, but not all of it. I'd say the juicy bits like the barley yellow dwarf virus are not online, I think, but you can look up anyway on the Chagas website. But loads of things in the diary for tillage farmers, Stephen, anyway.
Yeah, no, good to see. And good to see that these are coming back in person as well, because you just can't beat running into people over a cup of tea at these conferences.
Yeah.
Siobhan, we better keep the ball rolling here. What's happening in grain markets this week?
Oh, look, grain markets, they're in the red. They're on the way down. So I'm just looking at the minute as I look at Matif wheat for December, 319.75, December 2023, 325. In the grain trends report there that Andy has in the paper this week, you know, native prices for look, nearby wheat, you're at between 335 and 340. And then barley is somewhere 10 or 15 euro below this. And then we look ahead to 2023, Stephen, and we're looking at 310 euro for wheat and 300 euro for barley. And remember, they're dried prices. So at the minute, look, grain prices aren't doing anything to excite anybody. And where the prices of fertilizer are, look, maybe it's a good thing that some of the winter crops didn't go in, because, you know, there's going to be high input costs there coming next year. And at the minute, there isn't a good grain price there to cover those costs. I'll just go through some of the other prices. Like when you look at imported maize, that dropped again this week. I think that was at 340 last week and it's at 310 this week. So, you know, when we see maize under barley and wheat, it's never good for our grain prices. A few things that happened this week. Look, as this morning, before we went to print, there was no update on the grain corridor in the Black Sea. As we got up this morning, I see it here on Reuters. The United Nations Secretary General has said that on Thursday he welcomed an agreement by all parties to extend the Black Sea grain deal to facilitate Ukraine's agricultural exports from its southern Black Sea ports. So look, hopefully that means that grain will continue to come out of Ukraine. The WASDA came out as well this week, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that in the paper, but forecast on the WASDA, Stephen, was the USDA.
Good news or bad news, Siobhan?
Well, they revised their wheat production upwards. So it's not good. So higher production estimates in Australia, UK and Kazakhstan, they revised the whole number upwards, but despite reductions in Argentinian and EU production. So look, things still pointing to grain being in the red. Like, you know, Brazil has a lot of grain to get out there. It's a minute, a lot of corn. They're waiting on their soybeans to come in. So overall, look, I don't see things changing. Just to note on Isle Seed Rape price, Andy has it in there as well. November 2023, Isle Seed Rape price on Matif dropped to $618.25 per tonne on Tuesday. But look, $618.25, still a nice price. I think if we had heard that last year or 18 months ago, we would have been very impressed with that Isle Seed Rape price. So yeah, that's kind of where grain markets are at the minute. Stephen, I don't have Lombi or Bortmal prices this week.
Okay. That's all right, Siobhan.
We'll go on to the weather, Stephen. Have you got a report?
I do indeed, Siobhan. The report which Met Aaron sent in to us yesterday, it's actually in the paper as well. So look, I suppose the nuts and bolts of it, Siobhan, is that the current indications suggest that next week is going to continue quite cold for the time of year, which is a good thing in my book, with temperatures expected to be slightly below average and unsettled too, with spells of rain showers and strong winds at times. So I'm just looking over the bar charts for day-to-day rain predictions over the coming week in all of the areas of Ireland. And look, again, you can see this for yourselves on page 61 of the Farmer's Journal. Look, there's very few days there without a splash of rain. Southeast is looking like it's going to be probably get the lion's share of the rain, the west as well. And the northwest going to get a splash. What's new there, some might say. Southeast and the east might escape it on this for the rest of this week and maybe Sunday as well. But look, long and short of it is it's quite unsettled. So it is. And I suppose if you want any more information, don't bother going on to Met Aaron's website. Go onto the Farmers Journal, page 60. It's all there for you.
Good man, Stephen. Fair play. Yeah, so it doesn't look too promising for the week ahead. But sure, anyway, I'm looking out at fog here at the minute. I don't know what it's like up in Donegal.
Yeah, exact same. Real thick fog.
Yeah.
But now we're at spuds at the moment, so we are. So there is an opportunity. And we were at Beat yesterday, so we are getting work done.
Yeah. Beat coming out around here as well in Leash, yeah. Look, thanks a million, Stephen. Great to get the update on all the renewables and the biomethane. It was really good to have you on again this week. So look, we'll leave it there for this week, folks. Whatever you're doing during the week, stay safe and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.